The people who have performed the best with Bitcoin never sold. The best people who have performed with altcoins did sell. The burden of performance for altcoins is also getting higher and higher and higher. There's going to eventually be a come to Jesus moment.
Jordan, known as Permeable Nino, is the founder of Levelytics,
a data analytics company with a focus on bridging the divide between analytics and execution for crypto market participants.
I think we quietly have broken the bear trend, just waiting for the uppercut. Things are actually looking as healthy as they have in a very long time. People are not really levering up that much right now across the market. This setup became obvious like the past week or so.
Hey guys, don't skip this part. There's something for you to win here. We're running a 21-day sprint and giving away 3 signed copies of our Bitcoin book to listeners who help grow the show on Fountain. There are 3 ways to win. Either become the top supporter and cumulative sats zapped over this 21-day period, or provide the most Bitcoin-like zap, meaning you don't just zap big, but in style. Or last but not least, create the most amount of valuable content around any episode during this 21-day period on either X or Noster. Provided you are a subscriber to the show on Fountain, have reposted the sprint post on Noster or X, and emerge as the leader in any of the categories mentioned above, you'll be the proud owner of a new Bitcoin book in no time. We'll share an update of the leaderboard on each show during the campaign. Good luck, and now on to today's show. Hey guys, welcome back to Less Noise, More Signal. Joining me today is Jordan. Once again, we had him on the show before. It's great to have you back, Jordan.
Good to be back. I appreciate the honor of having a second visit to the Less Noise, More Signal podcast. So it's good to be here.
It's good to have you. Yeah, we just interviewed Jack on Chain a couple of days ago. You know, he gave us the all-in sort of overview on all things on chain, and I thought like I'll have to do a follow-up with you, because you're not that much, I think you're probably familiar with on-chain data as well, but you're not focusing on it primarily, but you're more focusing on like trading data, perpetuals, options, stuff like this. And I feel like it's a good add-on, you know, and something which rounds up the picture. So I wanted to get you on. It's great to have you.
Yeah, no, I need to listen to that podcast, but Chek is an old friend, a mentor. So yeah, he's the king of Bitcoin on-chain data and everything related to Bitcoin. So I tried to focus a little bit more on the altcoin universe and what's going on under the hood in altcoin markets. Because, you know, altcoins are basically the risk assets of crypto, right? So you can buy how altcoins are performing, what's going on within the derivatives data for altcoins. You can get a feel of what the risk appetite is for the crypto markets at large. So that's where I spend my time. And I use that, you know, obviously I'm a subscriber as well to Checkmate's newsletter, a Check on Chain. So I read his newsletter and I balance it with my views to make sure, are there things that are fighting against each other? Does everything make sense? Do I agree with this take? So it's fun. That's what's nice about seeing other research out in the wild, right? You get to compare your opinions. Even on Twitter, I get to see new people's opinions that they question the way I think about things, right? I always want to have my opinions challenged, which is why with my research, I make sure that everything is published very transparently, right? Like I always provide the calculations, the data is all on my website, dudeterminal.com. So it's always there and I'm always happy to be corrected if I'm wrong. So yeah, I think that covers what I do. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's so great about the space, you know, and I've seen a lot of people popping up, sharing their views and their sort of analysis and stuff, which I really like, you know, because exactly for the point that you mentioned, you know, you can compare your own stuff to their view and then maybe add some stuff that they've done better. And then maybe, this kind of completes your picture again. And that, in the end, hopefully provides the signal that the readers out there want. And I'm also a subscriber to Jack's newsletter, which is just a gem, you know, it's a treasure trove. Every week again, we get to read amazing things. So yeah, it's cool to have you on. I mean, maybe you mentioned you're focused a little bit on altcoins, you know, and obviously with the podcast, I mean, deep down inside, I'm a Bitcoin, not a maxi, but a Bitcoin realist, you know, just really think Bitcoin is the most important thing out there. It's also distinct from all of crypto, but then still sometimes people accuse me of of not being Bitcoin only. You know, you're looking at altcoins, you're sort of caring for them. And for me, it's not that much that I really care about them, but it's like, yeah, they play a role in today's world, you know, and they are around. Yeah. And I guess there's even a signal to derive from the altcoin space. You know, if you are a Bitcoin maxi who doesn't even trade Bitcoin, who just holds Bitcoin, I mean, yeah, obviously, then this is not for you. But if you kind of trade in Bitcoin with at least maybe a little part of your portfolio, looking into the altcoin space, yeah, because it's higher up the risk curve, so to say, can provide some alpha, right? Would you agree with that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look back to the early days, you know, we're both been in crypto for a long time. The most OG guys in crypto are traders, and all these traders, all they care about for altcoins is just swapping them to make more Bitcoin. That's what kind of what always the end game was. You know, back in the day, Bitcoin pairings, you know, alt BTC pairings like ETH BTC, SOL BTC, that used to be like the favorite thing that people used to look at, right? When it came to price action. So in that regard, altcoins do serve a purpose. They're risk assets, but you have to keep in mind as we trudge through time and the world becomes more and more volatile, right? The appetite for altcoins becomes less and less attractive, right? Because you could get that type of volatility in other assets that don't necessarily, that actually do things, that actually have real world value attached to them. So there's something going on in the altcoin space that I think Bitcoin maxis kind of do have a point a little bit. And they've always had a point that there is a reason to have a little bit of caution when it comes to dealing with altcoins, but they do serve a purpose. They do provide signal, and you can use it if you're just a Bitcoin only trader to also look at altcoin data. Because like I said, if you look at altcoin price action, altcoin derivatives, all this stuff bakes into the bigger picture, right? Because Bitcoin doesn't operate in a vacuum. It's one gigantic space. The money flows. And you know what? Another thing that's going on in just the total financial world is that you have crypto bleeding into traditional markets, right? You have all these equities getting added to Hyperliquid, for example. All of it's starting to become one big pile of money. And I think with that in mind, that's just something to keep track of when it comes to altcoins as well, because some of these money flows could just start spilling over backwards and forwards, right? For the time being, as we've seen, for the past 6 months, probably it's been one-way traffic, right? Like, you know, Bitcoin and crypto has completely just bled out on the operating table, whereas equities are just ripping to new highs and everyone's just having like a, you know, high-fiving and having a good time over there. So yeah, there's a lot to be said about altcoins do play a role. There is reason to be cautious with them. However, I think they're going to continue to play a role. So yeah.
To your point, the role is really changing, you know, because like I keep on saying we're not in that 2070-ish or 2018-ish type of environment anymore, you know, where all the altcoins were just going up because it was like the first proper bull run. We maybe had a different monetary environment back then as well, you know, with yeah. QE and all these things going on. And so
easy mode.
I mean, yeah, exactly. The easy mode is kind of gone ever since COVID hit and then 2022 came around. You know, I feel like that's why altcoins are changing. And you brought up the OG traders, you know, I mean, they did it right all along, you know, they were just looking at altcoins as a trading vehicle. And I think that's how you have to look at them today as well. There's maybe a few altcoins I would argue that maybe could be turning out as a proper investment, you know, whereas I'm still kind of skeptical where the value accrual really is, you know, but there are some out there. But then most of them, it's just also that they don't even have like a value accrual mechanism. They might have an interesting business model going on or stuff that is happening on the protocol, but the value doesn't really flow through into the token. And so that's why I think, especially if you are an investor, you know, and that's the predominant group I'm talking to here on the podcast. I mean, that makes a ton of sense if you're sort of very skeptical of altcoins from a holding perspective, because most of the altcoins, if you compare it to Bitcoin, they don't manage to outperform it at least over multiple cycles, right?
Yeah, they've been very poor for long-term investing. You know, so this is the way it works in crypto. The people who have performed the best with Bitcoin never sold. The best people who have performed with altcoins did sell. That's the gigantic difference. Satoshi never sold. Vitalik did. That's like the gap between the Bitcoin world and the altcoin world. If I could sum it up perfectly, that is the difference. And yeah, you just got to keep your head on a swivel. And I still, to this day, I think when you're looking at altcoins to invest in from a long-term perspective in your portfolio, you take that value that you think you landed on that's appropriate, probably divide it by 10. And that's probably the proper allocation percentage of where they probably land in your portfolio, just because the risk from a long-term investing perspective is still extremely high. There's just been really no true proven long-term winner in the altcoin space. You know, Ethereum is arguably the most successful altcoin ever. And go look at the ETH BTC chart. You know, it's about to roll back over again. So yeah, you got to keep your wits about you. And I think that bad sentiment just continues to bleed into altcoins, right? As you said earlier, the burden of performance for altcoins is also getting higher and higher and higher. So like you said, rates aren't zero anymore. Volatility is increasing in equity. So you can go chase that volatility in traditional markets. So you just really have to pick your places here moving forward. It's not like you said back in 2017, where there's only 100 altcoins or three coins on Coinbase, and you could just put in whatever amount of money and you immediately just came back out with like 5 to 10x more dollars. So yeah, you got to be careful.
Yeah, these times are definitely gone. Yeah. I mean, that would have been my first question, but we're already deep into weeds now. Like why is crypto lagging equities right now? You know, because you mentioned that they've been bleeding to other risk assets like equities for quite some time. But why is it the case? Is it predominantly because like people are recognizing that it's not really that type of an asset class that you can hold for the long term? Or why is it?
I think it's that, but also it's not the new shiny object anymore. You know, blockchains are pretty, you know, not perfectly understood, but they're pretty well understood what they're capable of doing. You know, back in the day in 2017, you thought you could make decentralized Uber. You know, that was like a thing that I think people were raising money in an ICO for. But now that whole notion has completely been eviscerated. You know, you understand what blockchains are good for, and you also understand the risks with building on chain. You know, the beauty of Bitcoin is that there's just like, it's difficult to build on chain. When it comes to DeFi, all these smart contracts, the attack surface is so gigantic that when you're parking money in this, it's also highly risky. And you have also this issue because of elevated, you know, rates you can go chase in TradFi, right? Because the treasury rate is what, I don't even know what it is right now, but you probably know better than I do, like 5, what is it?
Yeah, probably a little bit below 40, I guess, with Bill, yeah. 4%, I guess.
I don't track macro as much as I probably should, but the burden just of performance is just very, very, it's just much higher. And the problem with altcoins in general and crypto in general is that the product has not noticeably improved enough, in my opinion. I think Hyperliquid is probably the best example of the user experience and all around it being just a actual, like, visible improvement on the product. But otherwise, I mean, from 2021 till now, you know, when you had the initial DeFi summer, there's been improvements, you know, it's gotten better, but I still think that there's a lot that hasn't been accomplished. And you have that going on. But at the meantime, you have technology like self-driving cars. You know, I'm like, you know, I hop in the Tesla and it drives me to and from LA to San Diego with no issues, right? So that's something a little bit more to get excited about. And you start thinking, oh, like, is Tesla undervalued or something like that, right? It's just a lot more of exciting of an investment. You would get to, you see the future, right? And part of the problem with crypto is that future, and the future seems more well-defined now, right? So like you have to discount that a little bit more. So I think that bleeds into why altcoins don't perform.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's a good point. It's almost as if like there was a story to be told, you know, and in the beginning, a lot of people believed it and there was still room for it to come true, you know, and that's why people were like, yeah, we'll believe in it. But now given that we're now in maybe almost 10 years, you know, given that we say the last bull market was in 2016, 2017, you know, after 10 years, people are like, you can fool me once, you know, but you can't fool me twice, you know, and the third time you can't fool me. And that's why the story has run its course. And it's almost like, okay, things are moving elsewhere. I mean, you said it yourself, you know, the self-driving cars. I mean, I already see like all the space equities, you know, up on the horizon. If that bubble gets really blown up, we have the AI trade. I was just recently looking at all the graphene chips, you know, like usually chips are made out of silicon, I guess, you know, that's the main component, but the semis. And then if you look, there's like these graphene companies that are looking to use graphene as a substitutional element there, you know, and these companies, they've done like crypto-like returns, you know, 700% in a couple of weeks, you know. And so, as you said, the music is playing elsewhere. And that's why it's probably the case that crypto is lagging behind. But then, I mean, the other point, and I think you wrote this in a recent newsletter as well, is that like if you look at majors right now in crypto, they have become increasingly less volatile, especially over the last couple of months and maybe even years. And equities on the other side have become increasingly more volatile. And that's also sort of a problem, you know, because then you get the same type of returns with equities potentially, because that's always what people came to crypto for, you know, like even though it doesn't have a use case, at least it's more volatile. My boss still likes to say, you know, that's why I like Bitcoin. It's more volatile. It's more exciting. As a money manager, you get to make money. You can do active management more easily. But now with equities, how do you see that? You know, like equities becoming more volatile.
Yeah, I mean, it just narrows the gap. You know, it just, like I said, the burden of performance is just way higher for crypto. And the part of the problem is that, you know, when you look at the changes in Bitcoin market cap, right, like over time, like a 30-day change in Bitcoin market cap, and you compare it to stable coins, right? Stable coins are a steady trickle, right? It's not like huge moves up, like up and down like Bitcoin. So when it comes to a trading perspective, that bleeding into altcoins, a lot of that wealth is probably rotated still. People don't talk about this enough, but I think there's a decent chance that a decent amount of this capital has to be rotated from the majors. So if you're not getting that volatility, these large spikes in market cap or wealth is generated very quickly, it's tough for people to move down the risk curve, right? When it's a slow trickle upwards, you're just like, okay, like, you know, you just don't feel rich. You know, when, you know, back in the day, you remember 2017, I mean, I remember the prices were going up so fast. I was like, holy fuck. Like, you didn't even have to have that much money. And you're like, I'm rich. That feeling has kind of exited the building when it comes to majors. You know, the reality is, though, you know, you look at altcoins, for example, I think like AI and memes, they trade with like 100% annualized volatility. You know, 30-day annualized volatility is 100%, where I think equities are probably closer. For the equities that I look at are probably closer to 30 to 40 maybe, which is where they're kind of converging with crypto majors. So you still have it. It exists in altcoins. You can go chase it if you want. The problem is that you have to be very selective about it. And that's kind of like what I focus on a little bit more in the newsletter, that I'm like, these are not for long-term investing. I don't really care for pretty much all of them, to tell you the truth. However, they do serve a role in the larger financial investing universe, is that they are one of the most volatile assets with decent access for trading on the planet. So when they start to move in certain directions and they start to reach value levels, you know, all these different things you can look at, I'm like, okay, this is it. The stars are starting to align a little bit.
What is it about, I mean, AI coins, I get it, because like they have the connection to AI, at least like on paper, you know, even though sometimes there's not like a real connection, but that's why they kind of profit off this narrative that in TradFi AI is also, you know, really hyped. But then what is it about meme coins that makes them so volatile? You know, is it really that saying that meme coins are sort of no VCs, you know, fair launch, all these sort of sayings, which kind of sometimes also prove not to be true. But like, why do you think it's like this sort of last bastion where there's still volatility left in crypto?
Yeah, meme coins, I mean, maybe we should focus on the ones that are just bigger, because, you know, the smaller meme coins where they just get released on Pump Fund and they come out, and obviously those are just basically pump and dumps where the insiders hold the majority of the tokens, they wait for people to buy, then they dump them on their heads, right? The more longer lasting meme coins that are in the market, I think it's just kind of like the holder base, right? Like, I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of larger money managers are probably not even allowed to touch these things. You know, you go around telling your LPs that you lost a bunch of money on, like, I don't know, Giga or something like that, like the Giga Chad coin or whatever. You know, it's a difficult conversation to explain that to them, right? They're probably going to redeem, you know, probably pretty quickly, or it's within their mandate that they're not even allowed to touch it, period, right? So if you think about the holder base and the people that are trading this thing, it's fast money that are people on chain that are just straight degens, the people that have always been in crypto. They just keep migrating. They keep searching for their pocket to find that pocket of volatility. So I think it's just true crypto degens and probably the holder base and the people that are involved. So you get people online talking about how they're just long-term holders of a meme coin or something like that. I think it's like, yeah, you're a long-term holder until the price is right, basically. Whereas, you know, it's not exactly the same thing with Bitcoin, where there's like an ideological alignment with it. You know what I mean? I think it's just, it's just a little bit different. So I think it's really just the holder base that drives the crazy price action. Whereas, you know, the AI stuff, it's because it's the future that people don't fully understand yet. And because it's just kind of tied to that, you know, to the whole AI theme, I think that's a plenty of reason why they should trade with plenty of volatility.
Hey guys, I'm thrilled to share my new book, The Bitcoin Enlightenment, co-authored with Mexican billionaire Ricardo Salinas. Make sure you grab your copy now and learn about how one of the richest people in all of Latin America thinks about Bitcoin. You'll find the link in the show notes.
Yeah, no, to your point about the meme coins, I mean, you know, we had Murad on the show before, you know, and he's now famous for shilling that SPX 6900 thing, you know. Yeah. And I had him on the show twice and try to kind of dive deeper with him and also be kind of critical of that project. But then, I mean, it sounded kind of interesting because like he genuinely believes that they can create another Bitcoin, not maybe in Bitcoin sense, Immaculate Conception and everything, because that's a one-time thing that you cannot copy, you know. But then with the holder base and the culture and like the cult-like holders and everything. And I was just curious curious to see. And it was interesting to see that when we did that analysis and that some other people, Michael Nadeau from the DeFi report that we had on the show as well, did it before, looking at the retention rate of holders with meme coins, with like these major, bigger meme coins. And you could kind of see that, especially with SPX 6900, I mean, the retention rate was quite high, you know, also people holding $100K in that meme coin, they were holding on to that. And it was probably too early to tell if that really morphs into something Bitcoin-like. And maybe we'll have to look at that data set again and see if that's still the case. But at least they're trying to synthetically engineer Bitcoin, even if you know what I mean. And so it will be interesting, but it's probably just very early to tell if that's even happening, you know. And I feel like synthetically engineering Bitcoin is probably hard because Bitcoin just grew organically. If something wants to have staying power, it just needs to grow organically. And I'm kind of skeptical if you can, almost in a lab, like synthetically create that, you know. But that's probably what meme coins are about, or at least like these bigger ones, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I can respect that they're trying to build some sort of culture. You know, from what most of the stuff that I see Murad post about it, it seems like be a better person basically is the message. So I could get on board with that. You know, and I've met Murad and I've talked to him a fair amount, and he's a good dude. So like, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, that's good for them. I just think, I think it needs a little bit more time. You know, when you see like these, like, oh, these different wallets are all holding this much money and they never move their coins and all that stuff. I think for altcoins to really see how the true picture plays out, you need, I don't know, how long has SPX 6900 even been around for?
You're right. I mean, maybe 2024, 2025, I guess, not longer. I would have to look it up.
Yeah, I think at the earliest 2023, maybe, when the Bitcoin ETF got approved. Like,
yeah,
at the end
maybe.
Because I think that's when meme coins went on a little bit of a run, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, it's just not been around that long. You know, the reality is like maybe this is the first, you know, the past 6 months is the first real true gross bear market, you know, since it was even born. So it's been through one market cycle. So it's really hard to tell how these things are going to shake out over time. I guess we'll see. You know, I don't really have like super strong opinions about meme coins. I just think that they're just ways to, if you're trying to trade something that's volatile, it's like a good little space, especially if the crypto market conditions are ripe. It's no secret that crypto moves all in the same direction, pretty much, you know, whereas equities, it's more dispersed, the price action and the performance. So yeah, that's why it's easy to just like, you know, if you think, you know, crypto is going to perform well, you actually can just buy crypto across the board. Obviously, you want to buy the stuff that's stronger, leading, and better performing. But the reality is that you could buy anything and it'll probably go up if the whole crypto market's going up anyways, you know? And we just haven't reached that point in time where that level of maturity within the asset class where people are making true distinct bets, you know, at scale. And it's showing up in the data, right? There are one-off winners. You know, people get offended by this. So I'm like, the whole market moves together. Like, why bother? I think it's like a really offensive thing to say to crypto people, especially people that are like big and keen on fundamentals. And I think there's an element where people get irritated that you're like, they're like, this is a cool project. It does cool things. It makes money. I'm like, but price action stinks and it still moves with the rest of the entire market. So there's just something to be said about that it just all moves together.
Yeah. I mean, to your point about fundamentals, you know, that's kind of like the point that I tried to make earlier. Like, even if you have great fundamentals, if there's no kind of avenue that you see value accrue to the token itself, you know, and it can flow back to the token, then you can have fundamentals all day long. You know, they don't matter because the token is not impacted by it, you know. And there's various projects out there, I guess, who, even now me working in the institutional space, you know, I hear a lot of people, and that's no financial advice, especially because I think there's no value accrual mechanism, but a lot of people have been talking about Ondo, you know, that tokenized treasury platform and stuff, you know. And it's super high hype and everyone likes it, and I think they have a great business model, but the token, it's just not, there's no connection real, or no real connection between value and what they do. And so, I mean, that's also kind of a logical point for me, you know, because the equity-like structures cannot exist, because like then they would be equities and securities. But do we crypto? We don't want this, you know. And so you don't have these mechanisms like cash flow mechanisms that would strengthen a token, or you buybacks is also something which is, some of them do it, Hyperliquid and some others, you know, but it's kind of at the edge of it being kind of legal and stuff. It's almost to the point where in equity, you have this silent buy pressure through these mechanisms, you know, and in crypto, you have the silent sell pressure of like people yeah. and having entered early and just trying to sell out. Because even if you are a VC and you entered in 2020 and the token is down 80%, as a VC, you might still slightly be up and just you sell out. It's all these dynamics that people need to kind of factor in when they talk about altcoins. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's an element that the market structure of crypto is just not very good, just considering that you have these small businesses that are going liquid. These owners are getting liquidity on their equity, if you want to call it that, so early out the gate. Like, they're like, oh, it's like a two-year vesting period, then the cliff begins, right? And the two-year cliff or whatever. That's way too soon. You know, most businesses take like 10 years to build. So the problem is that the incentives are just structured horribly. And, you know, the irony of how horribly we set up these incentive structures in crypto, considering the whole premise of Bitcoin was aligning incentives to get people to, you know, reach consensus, right? That's basically the whole magic of Bitcoin. And we went the complete opposite direction with altcoin markets. And unfortunately, you just always cater to the lowest common denominator. If you see one person scamming, everybody else wants to make that money, because they're like, that's like a huge inefficiency in the market. I'm just going to exploit it. And we had a lot of scammers show up to crypto. And, you know, some of these people are not even scammers, right? They're just, and technically it's all legal. That's the problem too. So it's like all this stuff is just very hand wavy. So you just have a lot of that going on in crypto markets, which is why, to your point, you have a lot of silent sellers over time. So it's just all these things. And I think the beauty of what's going on in the rest of the world with rates going up, equities becoming more volatile, all these different things, is that there's going to eventually be a come to Jesus moment where there is a demand where you cannot make an altcoin unless it's going to actually be well done across the board. Otherwise, it goes to zero. I think it's taken probably way longer than most of us wanted it to. I think it was fun while it lasted, right? There's a period where I think a lot of people in the crypto casino were like, this is amazing. But now I think you are like not having a good time, right? If people are not enjoying themselves anymore. And it's a collision course. We're on our way. I don't know how soon it'll be, but it feels like we are approaching it, and that I think the tides are probably going to turn. You see Blockworks, they're starting to do some stuff with like investor relations stuff, like where all these protocols like share all their in-depth data. I think that's great work. That's like stuff that you want to see out in the wild. You want it to become more normalized in crypto. But yeah, there is a collision course with reality finally setting in for crypto markets. And eventually these protocols or tokens or memes or whatever, they'll eventually die if there's like not anything really convincing people to hold it anymore.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, it's already started, you know. It's just like they will probably never like concisively die in the sense of they're just going to be gone, you know, because it's still going to be out there on a blockchain, you know, maybe because some nodes are still running it, but they're just going to fade into oblivion, and that's how things are going to care for itself. So that's definitely interesting. Maybe one last point coming back to the equity volatility, you know, and I was wondering, maybe more of a macro thing, but have you thought about this? Because you were writing this in your last piece or one of your last latest pieces, you were asking the question, why has the floor for equity volatility been lifted, especially after 2020, you know, with COVID and continues to march higher? Any thoughts on that yourself, why this is the case?
To tell you the truth, I don't really have a really strong opinion about this, because I'm not a macro guy. I think that I think the easiest way you could put it is that we're moving to an increasingly uncertain world, and that the average person is becoming more and more uneasy about what the future looks like. So I think with that in mind, you're more willing, you can't take the same type of risks that you thought you could anymore. You know, back in the day, volatility in equities markets used to be at bottoms. Now we're starting to get volatility on the way up, which is kind of crazy, right? Like that's, you know, you're starting to get things starting to move out of whack, and we're just kind of moving into a period, like I said, that's just, I think, not really everyone's sure what's on the other side of the horizon. So yeah, I think that'd be the easiest way I could put it. I really don't have, otherwise, like I said, I'm not a macro guy, so I'm not going to talk too much
about that. No, all good. I was just wondering, because I think it's a very valid point. And it's something, as I mentioned it in my podcast with James last the last one show, the show that I did, you know, and when we were talking about it, like, yeah, even at the bank, you know, people are now wondering, like, even Swiss stocks, you know, like of big majors who have been very, very steady for years and decades, because yeah, Swiss is functioning but boring, and they are now also like Nestle and Roche and Novartis, and these stocks, they're kind of experiencing plus 4% days, you know, up and down in just one day, which was sort of not something you kind of could imagine or was unfathomable just a couple of years ago, I guess, you know, and we're really starting to see this. That's why I'm pondering over this question as well, and just kind of trying to collect as many opinions as possible. But maybe we can move on, you know, into the second part of this show. And I just want to talk about the state of crypto right now, especially also with Bitcoin. You know, some people are like, okay, the bear market might already be over. Others are like, no, it's going to take the typical turn. Bitcoin is going to head lower again. Where do you stand on this? And like, what type of data are you looking at to kind of inform yourself?
So I'm not very good at making the prediction, like the bear market, quote unquote, is over, right? I think I'm much better at operating on like a quarterly basis. If you want my 2 cents, I think for the next couple months, I think I expect crypto to go up. I know we're running into some resistance around here around the 80K level. I forgot to publish this in the newsletter. And one thing I need to do and do a better job of is publish the talking about like the other side of the coin, right? I've been talking about how I'm bullish. I have all these expectations for how Bitcoin funding is low. Bitcoin funding is low relative to altcoins. You can see willing to risk on in altcoins, which I believe people's willing data showing that people are willing to risk on into altcoins is a strong signal, right? It just tells you that there's risk appetite on the table too. I just think that this is a shakeout right now. I think we're just, you know, I've been talking about this for a while. This 76K to 80K level is going to be the big level that we have to break through. And there's going to be probably some chop in it. And what happened was that Bitcoin got into the 80K level, and then you had a lot of leverage jump on. You know, you saw the altcoin market starting to wake up a little bit. And that becomes like a recipe for things to get a little bit tricky, right? Where you have a lot of people risking on when we actually haven't broken through the level. And, you know, another thing I've been talking about as well is that, you know, we've had decreasing volatility for crypto in general, Bitcoin and alts for the past 6 months as well, as prices bled out, right? So as that's going on, you want to see eventually the uppercut. You want to see the move that's like, okay, volatility is no longer dying and it's back on the menu. And not just these one-time volatility spikes when there's huge deleveraging events, right? Like the one that happened in October of last year, the one that happened around Thanksgiving, right before right when we did our call, basically the market rugged. And then we had another one in February this year, right? Those are like one-time, one-off volatility events. What you really want is just an uptrending of volatility, right? That's what people come to crypto for. We've talked about that before, right? We just have not had that decisive move up from Bitcoin. So until that happens and you're sitting around this 80K level, there's just a lot of friction. Like there's a lot of uncertainty. People are not convinced quite yet. So yeah, I do think I do have a bullish bent moving for the next couple months.
Yes, I see. I mean, the point that you brought up, you know, when comparing to other crypto assets, very few people are longing BTC with leverage, and like altcoins are sort of more leveraged in that sense. I mean, that kind of goes to show that there's some risk appetite, but then also it could make you skeptical as well. You know, like, why aren't people leveraging up on the king? You know, like do some of the big whales know more, you know? And that's always the question. Like, do they know more? Probably not. But like, you know, it just goes to show, like, when it comes to BTC itself, people are still quite skeptical, you know, like, it's also funding rates. I mean, they've been decisively negative for so long. They just recently flipped positive again, but it's just not that they decisively flipped positive. So all these things are telling us this, at least when you look at BTC, and I feel like BTC would be the one running the course as a first, you know, as the first leader. People are still kind of you know, they're not putting the foot on the pedal, so to say, you know, like in that sense.
Yeah, I think just because it's been a grind up, right? Like I said, people get uneasy. And I think a lot of people, when you get these type of moves up, when it's a grind up, it's hard to have conviction when it's not obvious, right? So When you start printing 5 to 10% daily candles or something like that, and the volatility kicks in, that's when people start showing some courage. And, you know, that's really ideally not the time you want to be showing the courage. Ideally, you want to break the bear trend quietly, and then you give the uppercut. And that's where I think we are. I think we quietly have broken the bear trend, just waiting for the uppercut.
But in terms of, you know, BTC getting moving up with negative funding, I think it's just like, you know, it's just a healthy spot bid is my guess at this point, right? I think that's, I'm completely okay with that. And like I said, it's once the proof is obvious, that's when people become heroes and start jumping on the leverage. And the reality is, despite the fact that altcoins have had a ramp up in leverage, it's been nothing crazy. And you have to keep in mind that altcoin derivative markets, like perpetual swap markets, are dead. Like they've been absolutely massacred. There's just like not much leverage left in the system. And then the other thing, I've shared this metric in some of my other articles. There has been a confident willingness for people to hold on to their perpetual swap positions. I don't know if you've seen this chart in some of my other articles, but it is very clear to me that people are willing to hold on to their long positions. And they've been doing that since like mid 60K level. So it's been going on for a while now. So I think there's just like a quiet, confident base of holders, even in derivatives markets. So that's another thing to keep in mind. Yeah, I think we're in a healthy spot. And I think I would consider myself wrong if we got a weekly close below 76K. I think that's when I'd be like, okay, forget it. You know, maybe I go back to the drawing board and figure out what's going on. And that's the whole thing with doing analysis of markets and looking at metrics is one thing, but like moving it into execution and putting in it and getting on the scoreboard are like two different things that you have to finally merge together, which is why I do the newsletter, right? It's kind of like scratching that itch for myself, not only for readers, but I do it for myself. For me, it's like a learning process as well. But so I think that's where my head's at.
Makes a ton of sense. The same for me with a newsletter. Usually you write for yourself, you know, and you want to let other people be able to partake in your thought process and reasoning. So, I mean, very interesting. You mentioned the spot-driven rally, you know, and the healthy spot that BTC is at. I mean, intuitively, I would agree because that's kind of what you feel like. You know, there's all the macro uncertainty that we're running up at 200-day moving average and all these things. And Bitcoin, you know, it's not decisively going through it and breaking through it, but it's also not like really pumping up against it and now reversing. So it feels like sort of it doesn't want to go down yet, or it doesn't want to go up yet, you know. So obviously we don't know, but you had this very interesting chart. I'm going to show it here in a second, you know. But like the, you know, in your recent newsletter, you had this ROI delta versus returns. Can you maybe high level explain what you try to do there? And then we maybe look at each quadrant and why sort of, what these quadrants mean, you know, is that something you can explain?
Yeah, we can talk about that. So for at a high level, the ROI delta, that can be confusing given the way I named it. It is returns minus OI delta, but returns minus open interest delta. So what I took was I took the 90-day average return for altcoins and I compared it to the 90-day change for the average altcoin perpetual swap open interest, right? And the reality is that, you know, the returns are driven by price, right? And then you also have open interest denominated in dollars driven by price and the number of contracts that are open. So when you, even though it's not, the math is not perfect, it's a good proxy for if you take, considering both of them take price into account, they kind of cancel each other out. So what you're left with is actually the directional flows of contracts opening and closing for altcoins in perpetual swap markets, right? And normally, this is actually a very difficult calculation to come up with, which is why the best you can do really is a proxy, right? Because if you're comparing BTC open interest versus ETH open interest, ETH open interest is denominated in ETH, right? And BTC open interest is denominated in BTC. So you can't mix those native units together, right? Otherwise, it just starts to become a jumbled mess, right? Because, you know, ETH has a much larger supply than Bitcoin, or you have like something like XRP has an infinite supply, right? So obviously, the amount of units sitting in the open interest on the perpetual swap markets are going to probably be way larger than whatever you have for Bitcoin, right? In native units. So yeah, that's kind of what you're really going for. So what that ROI delta really shows you is the contract, the perpetual swap contract flow for altcoin markets at large. Is the general idea.
And the OI delta, can you kind of summarize this again? Like, what is the delta? Is it like positions closed and open? And then sort of, can you kind of explain this again? Like, what is the delta?
What I'm saying is it's really risk. It's returns minus, I'm calling it the delta between returns and OI. But yeah, it's basically the simple thing is that ROI delta is just the amount of contracts that are flowing in and out of the market. So if you get a positive value, right, because you're doing returns minus OI, if returns are greater than the change in OI, that signals to you that over that time period, that contract's probably closed, right? And when do contracts close? Contracts close during liquidation events generally, right? Somebody's offsides one way or the other. That happens when the market rugs or when shorts get blown out when price goes upwards, right? That's like the two big gaps between the two. And then it goes vice versa for when the delta goes negative. When open interest increases more than returns, that means people are getting levered up, right? And that can mean people are shorting the lows or getting long as they become, right? Like I said, they gain courage as price breaks out and people decide they want to become heroes. And there's like in the article, I kind of concluded with one of the big takeaways is obviously when you create these metrics and you go through all the analysis, people are like, where are we at right now though? Who cares? Like, this is a cool study. Who cares? Where are we at right now? And the reality is right now we have positive 90-day returns and we have a positive ROI delta. And because we have a positive ROI delta, it tells you that people are not really levering up that much right now across the market. You know, even though things are, you know, heating up just a little bit, if you really zoom out, things are really not that overheated. I would say things are actually looking as healthy as they have in a very long time. The last time we had this type of setup was the post BTC ETF approval, which was in October, November 2023. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like literally this setup became obvious like the past week or so. So early innings, and obviously nothing's ever guaranteed, but
yeah. No, that's exactly well explained. I mean, I have the chart here, you know, and it's really like, as you said, now if you have these OI and sort of net position being closed down, you know, then and at the same time, you have positive returns. That's sort of an indication, as you said, it's a spot driven rally. And then again, if you have like returns negative, but positions are still closed, it's kind of deleveraging that you mentioned, you know, driven by the drawdown. And then again, if the opposite is sort of the case and you have like the RO, also the OI delta negative, which means like more positions are being added in terms of OI, that kind of means you have either when it's positive returns, as you say here, it's a leverage driven rally usually happening towards maybe the some local top or maybe the global top, or it's in an environment where people are just have acknowledged it's full out bear, you know, and you just want to kind of short as much as possible and at any time, you know, and that's why OI is also increasing with shorts piling up and you have still negative returns, you know, because shorts are sort of in the right, you know.
Yeah they're getting rewarded, right? They don't really get get punished, right? But one of the biggest times that you actually saw them get punished and might be part of the reason why the ETF rally was so successful and pumped so hard is that you had that period all the way throughout 2023 for like all the summer leading into the fall before the ETFs got approved, where you had negative 90-day returns and negative ROI delta, right? So you had bad returns and people getting complacent shorting, basically. And then the price broke out and the market went crazy, right? And that's when you get a spot-driven rally and you get a bunch of contracts closing, is that all these shorts just got blown out for months afterwards, right?
Yeah.
You can see it in the charts. And so, you know, that can happen when people get too cozy in their short positioning.
No, amazing. Thanks for explaining it to me. I just wanted to bring this up because when I was reading the article, I felt like, wow, that was quite eye-opening to me, you know, because you hear that term a lot, like a spot-driven rally. And then people are looking at what is a spot-driven rally, you know, how can we even assess? And now you were like the first dude putting some actual numbers to that and trying to explain it with a metrics that at least to my eye, it makes a ton of sense, you know, and then you have like sort of two metrics that you can compare. And then if you see, okay, this is actually lining up, then you can maybe not with certainty, there's never certainty in our world, but with high confidence conclude, okay, this is actually maybe a spot driven rally, you know, as we're seeing right now. And so I encourage everyone to go read this article. I'll link it in the show notes. And it's just exploring crypto market regimes by using 90-day returns and 90-day change in perpetual swap open interest.
A mouthful,
but very nice. So just congrats, because I really liked it. And this is something very actionable that people can look at. So
thank you.
Keep up the work. I encourage people to check out the newsletter. As said, I'm a vivid reader. I like everything that you're putting out. So any last words before we close down? I think you have also a terminal where people can check the charts.
I mean, no. So I need to add the charts from the article yesterday, and I need to add the charts from last week's, because, you know, I basically, for people who aren't familiar with the newsletter, I do the Tuesday one that comes out is just me talking about the market with metrics that usually are already built that I've had from previous articles, right? And I go through that and I do analysis of the market. And then I show you how my portfolio, not my portfolio, the Levelytics portfolio is constructed accordingly, right? And that way I try to merge the ideas of theory, which is analysis, application, which is execution in terms of how I trade and manage the book, right? And then Friday, I do like a new research topical piece where I focus on a topic and I dive deep into it. So that's what the topic was for today. And then otherwise, yeah, so I'm going to add the past 2 weeks of topical research this weekend because I have a lot of time to myself this weekend. So I'm going to just be on the computer working on that. I'm always slow to add things to the site, which is annoying. I need to be better about that. But otherwise, go to dudeterminal.com, which is my analytics website. And then levelytics.substack.com is my newsletter. And like I said, newsletters come out every Tuesday and Friday. And yeah, I think that's about it, though. I really appreciate you having me on. And like I said, the ultimate honor to be invited back. So I always love talking, love chopping it up. And
likewise, you know, the favor is all mine, or like I love it talking to you. So always getting a lot out of this. And as I said, reading the articles, especially insightful. And so thanks a lot for coming on again. We'll definitely have you back on. And in the meantime, enjoy the weekend then that you mentioned, you know, apart from putting up these charts, maybe you can also get some other things going and maybe aside from the computer, but it's great for putting in the work. So thanks a lot, Jordan.
Of course, man. But yeah, always a pleasure, Pascal, and talk soon.
Yes, thank you.